Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand, Brian Lin, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, shortly before Christmas last year, Brazilian piano player João Carlos Martins invited his friends to a bar near his home in São Paulo. He wanted to show them the best gift he had received in many years, a new pair of gloves. They are not just any gloves, however. The specially made bionic devices are letting the 79-year-old play with both hands for the first time in more than 20 years. The artist is considered one of the greatest players of the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. Martins retired last March. By then, he had undergone 24 medical procedures to try to reduce pain caused by a progressive disease and from a series of accidents. His limitations had forced him to work mostly as a musical conductor since the early 2000s. But in the final days of 2019, friends returned to his home. They listened to him once again bring his favorite classical music back to life on his piano. Before the gloves, which were especially developed for him, Martins could only play songs slowly with his thumbs and sometimes his pointer fingers. He told the Associated Press, "After I lost my tools, my hands, and couldn't play the piano, it was as if there was a corpse inside my chest." Martins's health problems date back to 1965. He became known for coming back from every struggle he faced. For example, he suffered nerve damage in his arm from a soccer injury. While he was on tour, a robber hit him over the head with a metal pipe in Bulgaria. But even his close friends believed that the latest surgery on his left hand would mark the end of his days as a pianist. However, one designer believed Martins's retirement had come too early. That designer, Ubirita Bizarro Costa, created special bionic gloves for Martins's hands. The gloves help move his fingers up after they press on the piano keys. Costa said he created early models based on images of Martins's hands. But he said those models were far from ideal. He then decided to tell Martins about his efforts. Costa and Martins then spent several months testing different models. The perfect match came in December and cost only $125 to build. These days, Martins never takes off his new gloves, even when he goes to sleep. He said, "I might not recover the speed of the past. I don't know what result I will get. I'm starting over as though I were an 8-year-old learning." Martins said he has received more than 100 devices in the last 50 years as possible solutions to his hand problems. None worked well or long enough. but these gloves do, he said. The new gloves have given Marchines a new goal. He hopes to play the piano at New York's Carnegie Hall in October. He is already set to conduct a concert celebrating the 60th anniversary of his first appearance there.
The sound of insects fills a former train station in the Kenyan town of Kew, a 2-hour drive from Nairobi. The train station, built during British colonial rule, was closed in 2012. Now, old railroad sleeper cars lie in the grass around the building. The 6,000 people who live in the area did not lose just their train station 8 years ago. They stopped using rail service. They depended on the old train to get to their jobs or the nearest hospital. Traveling by road in this part of eastern Kenya can be slow and costly. Just 500 meters from the old station, the Chinese built a new rail line. Its high-speed trains pass through Kew every day, but they do not stop at this forgotten town. Opened in 2017, the new $3.3 billion railroad is part of China's One Belt, One Road initiative. The Chinese have provided support for a series of infrastructure projects, changing trade and transportation between China and the rest of Asia, Europe, and Africa. The new railroad reduced travel times by 50% for passengers and products going between Nairobi and the port of Mombasa. The train takes just over 4 hours to make 6 stops, but only runs once a day. The old train ran 2 times a day and made 46 stops. This new railway is just for the rich. We do not benefit, said Thomas Mutivu, who lives in Kew. Mutivu added that he used to go to work in Nairobi by train every day. But now the train no longer stops, and it is too far and costly by road. He has stopped going to the capital. Others who took the train daily to Nairobi now live there full-time during the work week and return to Kew on the weekends, he added. State-operated Kenya Railways said the new line has increased local travel. People who used to travel by road or airplane now take the new train. Last year, nearly 5 million tons of goods were shipped on the new line. The railroad tracks for the line cut Emily Katambuya's farm in half. Although she was given money for her land, she now struggles to get to the market without the old train. The government should put a station here so we can benefit, since we are traders who need to travel and sell our produce, she said. Vegetable seller Margaret Najeri finds it difficult to visit a doctor without the old train. The nearest hospital is 24 kilometers away, mostly on a dirt road. Local residents must now pay nearly $5 to get to the hospital by motorbike or minibus. That is 5 times the cost of taking the old train line. We have to wait on the road many hours for transport because the new railway does not have a stop here, said Njeri. The British built the old train line more than 100 years ago. It was often called the Lunatic Express because it made so many stops. However, over the years, many people came to depend on the train line for everyday transportation. I'm Susan Shand.
European researchers say they have created a process that can produce oxygen from moon dust. The process could provide a major source of oxygen for humans taking part in moon exploration activities in the future. Researchers from the European Space Agency, or ESA, carried out the experiments at a laboratory in the Netherlands. They reported their results in a study published in Planetary and Space Science. The team says ESA's experimental plant was able to successfully produce oxygen from simulated moon dust. The dust is part of a material known as regolith, a top layer of dirt and rock pieces that sit on the surface of the moon.
Samples of regolith returned from the moon have confirmed that the material contains about 45% oxygen by weight. However, the oxygen is chemically locked in the form of minerals or glass, so it is not easily available for use. Having real samples of regolith from the moon made it possible for the researchers to create the simulated moon dust material used during testing. The oxygen extraction process is carried out using a method called molten salt electrolysis. This involves first placing the regolith in a metal container. Calcium chloride salt is added to the mixture, which is then heated to 950 degrees Celsius. At this temperature, the regolith remains solid.
Next, an electrical current is passed through the material. The researchers say it is this step that results in oxygen being extracted from the regolith. The study reported that up to 96% of oxygen in the simulated moon dust was extracted during the experiments. ESA's long-term goal is to design an oxygen-producing pilot plant to operate full-time on the moon. The first technology demonstration of the system is expected to take place in the middle 2020s.
Beth Lomax of the University of Glasgow was a lead researcher on the project. Being able to acquire oxygen from resources found on the moon would obviously be hugely useful for future lunar settlers, both for breathing and in the local production of rocket fuel, she said in a statement. The researchers reported that, as a bonus, the process also results in the production of usable metallic materials. ESA researcher Alexandra Meris said the finding that a number of metals are left behind was an important discovery. This is another useful line of research, to see what are the most useful alloys that could be produced from them, and what kind of applications could they be put to, he said in a statement.
ESA and the U.S. space agency NASA are both working on plans to return human beings to the moon. NASA has set a goal for 2024 with the aim to keep humans on the moon for long periods. ESA officials say the latest experiments were part of expanded engineering development aimed at finding new ways for lunar materials to be used to support future human activities. Last August, NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida announced its own plans to develop a device that would melt lunar regolith to extract oxygen.
The NASA plan would involve heating the regolith to more than 1,600 degrees Celsius, and then flowing electricity through the material, the agency explained. The process would attempt to cause a chemical reaction to split the regolith into oxygen and metals. Kevin Grossman is a materials science expert at Kennedy Space Center. He said researchers will be carrying out experiments to test the technology with the goal of getting NASA, in his words, one step closer to an automated mass production of oxygen on the moon. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In 1914, Europe exploded into the First World War. It was a war no nation really wanted, but no nation seemed able to stop it. The assassination of Austria's Archduke Franz Ferdinand in the city of Sarajevo was the spark that set off the explosion. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell about the war and how it affected the United States under President Woodrow Wilson.
The Austrian Archduke was murdered by Serbian nationalists. They opposed Austrian control of their homeland. After the assassination, Austria declared war on Serbia. One of Serbia's allies was Russia. Russia agreed to help Serbia in any war against Austria. Austria had allies too. The most important was Germany. Germany wanted Russia to stay out of the war. When Russia refused, Germany declared war on Russia. Then Germany declared war on Russia's close ally, France. Britain entered the war a few days later when Germany violated the neutrality of Belgium.
One nation after another entered the conflict to protect its friends or to honor its treaties. Within a week, most of Europe was at war. On one side were the Central Powers, Germany and Austria-Hungary. On the other side were the Triple Entente allies, France, Britain, and Russia. Many other nations took sides. Bulgaria and Turkey joined the Central Powers. Italy, Romania, Portugal, and Greece joined the Allies.
The United States hoped to stay out of the war. President Wilson immediately declared American neutrality. He said, "It is a war with which we have nothing to do, whose causes cannot touch us." Most Americans agreed with President Wilson. They did not want to get involved in the fighting. However, many found it difficult to remain neutral in their hearts. Some Americans had family roots in Germany. They supported the Central Powers. A greater number of Americans had family roots in Britain or France. They supported the Allies. Yet the official American policy was neutrality. The United States planned to continue to trade with both sides.
Germany and Austria expected a quick victory in the war. They were caught between two powerful enemies, Russia and France. But German military leaders were not worried. They had a battle plan they were sure would succeed. The German generals planned to strike quickly at France with most of the German army. They expected to defeat France in a short time and then turn to fight Russia. In this way, the German army would not have to fight both enemies at the same time.
At first, the plan worked. 2 million German soldiers swept across Belgium and into France. They rushed forward toward Paris, hoping for a fast victory. But the German commanders made a mistake. They pushed their men too fast. When British and French forces struck back outside Paris, the tired and worn German soldiers could not hold their positions. The battle was fierce and unbelievably bloody. In the end, the Germans were forced to withdraw. The German withdrawal gave the Allies time to prepare strong defenses. There was no chance now for a quick German victory. Instead, it would be a long war, with Germany and Austria facing enemies on two sides. Britain and France were on the west, Russia was on the east.
The Allies took immediate steps to reduce Germany's trade with the rest of the world. The British Navy began seizing war supplies found on neutral ships sailing toward German ports. It then expanded its efforts to block food exports to Germany. The blockade by Britain and the other Allies was very successful. Germany faced possible starvation. Its navy was not strong enough to break the blockade with surface ships. Its only hope was to break the blockade with another naval weapon, submarines. Germany announced that it would use its submarines to sink any ship that came near the coast of Britain. The threat included ships from neutral nations that tried to continue trading with the Allies.
The United States and other neutral nations immediately protested the German announcement. They said it was a clear violation of international law. When a German submarine sank a British ship in the Irish Sea, one of the victims was an American citizen. A few weeks later, an American oil ship was damaged during a sea battle between British Navy ships and a German submarine. Then came the most serious incident of all. It involved a British passenger ship called the Lusitania. The Lusitania was sailing from New York City to Britain, when it was attacked by a German submarine. The Lusitania sank in 18 minutes. 1,200 persons were killed. 129 were Americans.
The sinking of the Lusitania shocked and horrified the American people. They called it mass murder. They turned against Germany. President Wilson warned that he might declare war on Germany if Germany continued to sink civilian ships. Germany did not want war with the United States. It already faced a strong fight against the European allies. It promised not to sink any more civilian ships without warning, and it offered regrets for the Lusitania incident.
President Wilson accepted Germany's apology. Like most Americans, he hoped to stay out of the bloody European struggle. And he also knew that the record of the Allies was not completely clean. For example, he was troubled by reports of mass hunger in Germany. He and other Americans felt the British food blockade was cruel. They also were shocked by the way British forces brutally crushed a rebellion in Ireland at the time. Most of all, the American people were sickened by reports of what was happening on the battlefields of Europe. The armies were using poison gas and other terrible weapons. Soldiers on both sides were dying by the millions. The war had become a bloodbath.
The United States had a presidential election in 1916. President Wilson won the nomination of the Democratic Party to seek re-election. Democrats around the country shouted their support with these words, "He kept us out of war." Wilson himself did not like the words. He felt it raised false hopes. But people continued to say it because they did not want war.
The Republican Party nominated Supreme Court Justice Charles Evans Hughes as its candidate for president. Hughes was a moderate Republican. He supported a number of social reforms. Like Wilson, Hughes promised to keep the United States neutral. However, one of his supporters was former President Theodore Roosevelt. And Roosevelt called for strong American policies that could lead to war. Roosevelt's words led many Americans to see Wilson as the candidate of peace and Hughes as the candidate of war.
Voting in the presidential election was very close. At first, it seemed Hughes had won. He went to bed on election night, believing he would be America's next president. But voting results later that night confirmed Wilson as the winner. The election was so close, the Republicans did not accept defeat for 2 weeks. Woodrow Wilson had won another term. During that term, he would find it increasingly difficult to honor the words of the campaign, "He kept us out of war." Finally, he would find it impossible. The United States entered World War I while Woodrow Wilson was president.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.